cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it. Song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Friday morning. We do appreciate you listening. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line, and we'll try to respond. We'll respond accordingly. Anyway, joining us now, it is Friday. It is time for our returning champion, as we do about this time every Friday, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for making time for us every week. We certainly do appreciate it. You'll be happy to hear this, and I know you were early on the bandwagon on this. That Perry County facility that we talked about as part of solving the state prison problem, we just had the leader Ledbetter on from the House. He says that's in play, that in discussions with the governor and whatever the future plan is, could involve Perry County, if not outright buying it or purchasing it, maybe leasing it and making that part of the whatever the comprehensive solution may be to figure out this problem.
I certainly agree with that. I know it was a big topic of conversation yesterday in our prison work group meeting with the Department of Corrections Commissioner and a lot of House members for the first time that were brought into that prison work group that the Senate's been working on for a number of weeks now, for some time now, but Perry County is absolutely being discussed, as it should be discussed. I think you wrote an article about that probably 3 years ago when we started talking about this issue and how we absolutely needed to use this vacant facility, 700-bed facility that has sat vacant for a good period of time, and I'm encouraged that DOC is putting that in the mix when trying to figure out the holistic plan to deal with our prison infrastructure problems.
Now, let's catch our listeners up on this. Perry County, it's in the Black Belt, just to the west of Selma. Maybe if you've ever driven up from Mobile to Tuscaloosa or points beyond, you've gone through Perry County. It's really in the southern part of Perry County, Highway 80, that kind of hits the middle of the state there. It's right off of that. This was a facility, I want to say I first heard, you know, the discussions. It's like back in the 1990s, the construction on again, off again. It's been there. It's been a part of, discussions for a long, long time, but it's never been like fully functional as part of the state of Alabama's corrections. And you ask people why not, and the only answer I ever get is, well, there's just no one around to staff it. That becomes more difficult. But just a little background about that facility and what your understanding of it is.
Well, the facility was built back during the Riley administration and is owned by the GEO Group, which is a private prison company. And the idea back then, wait for it, was to lease the prison to the state or to have the state pay a per bed, a headcount per bed to put prisoners there. The issue was the state never did that. So here's a privately constructed prison, privately owned prison on private property in Perry County that has essentially never been used. Now, to have an asset like that unutilized for decades is when we have a huge population problem, prison population problem, is almost unexcusable from where I sit. The legislature has appropriated millions of dollars to purchase that facility in the past. DOC has not done that. Yes, they have brought up staffing concerns in Perry County about the availability of staff, but we have staffing concerns everywhere, and I'm just not sure that's a good enough excuse for me. I do think, though, that they are coming around to the idea of utilizing that facility, even if it's just as some swing space as we renovate and construct new facilities to be able to move prisoners out of a facility while it's being renovated and then put them back in there, and then to transition that facility to something else, whether that's some sort of transitional program or education program later on. But it's there, it's built as a prison, it's purpose built, and we ought to use it.
And I assume you've toured this facility. You know, one of the other things you hear about the current existing facilities, the problem there is just the way they're built. You can't really utilize technology, and that technology could be used in a way that may decrease the overhead or the personnel needed to manage a facility. Do you see that as any of the logistical stuff that we're talking about now? How does that facility in Perry County line up with what you hear now?
It's a much newer facility than many of the state-owned facilities. It has not been utilized, so it's pretty brand spanking new. It would need some technology upgrades. Even a new facility that's 20 plus years old would need some technology upgrades. But I think it's as close as we could get to having something ready to go in short order. Again, to handle some swing population as we move folks around to try to do renovation and construction. But I think it's pretty easy to get it up and going. Now, the format, the layout, if you will, is not the new necessarily modern way that the DOC is hoping to head, with more cells and less dormitory housing. However, we still do and still need to have some dormitory housing in the mix. And while Perry County is predominantly dormitory housing, it does have some cells, and I think could be used appropriately for minimum or medium security folks, and then utilizing the balance of that space in the system for our more high security folks. But I think it needs to be part of the mix. It will be part of the mix, and I think we're finally going to see that asset utilized.
We're joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Senator, we'll move on to something else here, and I don't know if you keep it up with the Senate race, the U.S. Senate race, that is, coming up. I know you got your own election probably to worry about. But the thing I think is important and why I bring this up, starting to get these candidates on and get them to talk about I-10 and the Bayway there, and just making that more of an election topic for this cycle, particularly for this part of the state. But have you you've heard or anything make you interested, or do you think maybe we need to make this a bigger thing? That is probably a lot of what people care about. What impacts their day to day lives when it comes to federal government, federal money. That really strikes a nerve there. But do you have any thoughts on that as it pertains to the politics we're heading into now?
Well, I was really glad to hear Katie Britt come out and say that she just was not in favor of a toll plan for the bridge. And Katie's got the background really to back that up, if you will. She knows how how federal funding works and how to get federal funding. I mean, she's worked for the guy that makes federal funding happen for Alabama, Senator Shelby, and she understands the gravity of what she's saying there. But I think the solution, and I got asked a lot of questions while I was in Montgomery this week about Katie's comments about the toll, and said, hey, are we ever going to get this bridge done? And my answer is yes, we're going to get the bridge done, but it is going to come when a administration, whether it's this administration or the next one, prioritizes infrastructure funding for South Alabama. And that's not just the federal money, but that's state money as well. And it can't be just a little bit. It is going to have to be a major investment, similar to what was done in Birmingham, to upgrade our infrastructure on the I-10 corridor. We've invested in the port. There are huge logistical and warehousing distribution facilities all along Mobile and Baldwin County on I-10. And, if we're going to have all of those investments really pay off, we're going to have to make sure we've got the infrastructure to get those trucks back and forth and, frankly, to get our commuters back and forth on a regular basis.
It's interesting you bring that up, and I remember watching your campaign last cycle in 2018. That was a big central theme of it. We nerves, our emotions were very raw after the way the BP oil spill money was allocated by the legislature, and the notion there that we needed somebody that was more going to defend the turf, if you will, of the state, this part of the state that is, was needed. Do you find that to still to be kind of a struggle? And I don't know, maybe we haven't heard, it doesn't seem like we've encountered that problem quite as much this quadrennium. But that, you know, the tribalism, the geography, that the one part of the state is being neglected for another.
Well, Jeff, I mean, obviously that's something that, that I have made a point out of and that I have worked very hard this quadrennium. So I'm glad you're not feeling as neglected, and we're not feeling as neglected. That's something I've been working hard on. You know, I serve as on the State Transportation Improvement Plan Subcommittee for the Joint Transportation Committee. You know, the chairman of that subcommittee. I serve on the Senate Transportation Committee. You know, I'm all about transportation dollars, and I'm thrilled that as the former chairman of the Eastern Shore MPO, I've been really able to work on that state transportation plan. And in Baldwin County in particular, we are slated to receive and are receiving currently more state road dollars than any other county in the state. So think about that for a second. To go from where we were to where we are now in a few short years, more state transportation dollars than any other county, that's really saying something. And that's a good thing to have happen, and I'm proud of it, but I'm certainly not going to rest on my laurels. We've got more to do, and with the fast-growing nature of Baldwin County in particular in my district, we're going to have to keep up that hard work to make sure we continue to attract more, not just state, but federal dollars.
Well, tell me this, though, and maybe, you know, some listeners may not realize this. When we talk about growth in Alabama, and it tends to be more about the north part of the state, Madison County, Limestone County, Morgan County, those places. But Baldwin County by far is going to outpace even those places. And I don't think maybe people recognize that, or maybe not, aren't as aware of it as, you know, because then with that are going to come the growing pains. And like you said, the need for more transportation infrastructure.
Well, I continue to be a cheerleader for that, and to make sure that folks do understand that. I host, you know, colleagues in my district all the time. You know, the good news is we've got the beach, we've got the Grand Hotel, you know, both in my district, and folks are in my district for conferences, for vacations. You know, they're in South Alabama, they're in Baldwin County an awful lot. And that really gives us the opportunity to showcase not only the great things that are going on in Baldwin County, but some of the challenges as well. You know, I talked with Senate Pro Tem Reed, who came down to visit a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, we talked about the tourists in the area and the 6 million tourists that come to Alabama's beaches every single year, that come to South Baldwin County every year. And I'm pressed on Senator Reed and others that that's more than the entire state of Alabama, every man, woman, and child packing up and coming to South Baldwin County every single year, and to contemplate what that means from a transportation needs standpoint. And I think those types of hands-on messaging is really working for us and getting us more of the awareness about how state transportation dollars should be spent in coastal Alabama.
Finally, Senator, one thing that's come up lately is certainly a national news story, the push for vaccines and, you know, COVID becoming, I think, more of a bigger discussion right now. The day before yesterday, one of the scientists from UAB warned that if the vaccination rates did not get up higher, then we could face another lockdown. And almost immediately, the governor came out, pushed back against that, said that that's not going to happen. And was kind of put off by AL.com for not reaching out to her for comment. But does that even make you feel pretty good that the governor is not looking to revisit what had happened from 2020, that the lessons learned? And I know that that shutdown really, really hit your Senate district really hard with the tourist economy. But you got to feel pretty good knowing you got that vote of confidence.
I was glad to hear the governor say that. You know, of course, you know, she readily admitted that mistakes were made in picking winners and losers and shutting down certain things arbitrarily, certain whole sectors of our economy arbitrarily, and that was just not the best way to handle it. I appreciate that she learned some of those lessons, and I appreciate that she is getting out there ahead of time and saying we're not doing this again. That's a step in the right direction. I certainly would not support another shutdown of any kind. I think it was really an overreach last time, and has negative impacts that are long-lasting on our workforce and our economy and our small businesses. I appreciate the Lieutenant Governor's efforts and the committee he put me on to help us get back and reopen. And I hope we don't have to go through that again. But, you know, good news from the governor, that's not something that's going to happen. And shame on AL.com for not at least asking her for a comment on that story before running that.
Yeah, well, I just that is being used out there as a talking point. I don't know. I don't think it was a realistic talking point to be said, but it certainly scared a lot of people and made them concerned. Not again. And that is something, I guess, when you talk about legislative efforts to curb some of that executive power, you didn't quite get it done, but there just seems like that discussion never goes away.
No, it doesn't, and it shouldn't. I mean, that is something that we ought to be very concerned about. And, you know, the political scientist in me, you know, looks at that comparison between legislative and executive powers. And, you know, we've talked about that. We've talked about that legislation. You and I have talked about it ad nauseum. I mean, it's something that we need to continue to look at. I don't know, unfortunately, if there will be the appetite to do that again now that the pressure's not on. But it's still something that concerns me.
Senator, we got to leave it there, but as always, we appreciate your time, and we will talk again next week.
Thanks for having me on. Have a great weekend.
You do the same. Say Senator Chris Elliott of Daphne right there. Let's get a break in. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Oh, West Virginia coal miner, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living, just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.